Hello, welcome again to Comic Connoisseurs. Tonight we'll be talking about our own ethnicities being represented in comics. Of course, I'm my co-host, JD from Saskatoon.
Da, comrade.
Also with us is Red Ink.
Oh, white man.
So let's get started here. I'm going to dive in first. I'm probably going to say the same thing over and over again, so I'm just going to cut to the chase really quickly here. There's one Korean character in a superhero comic that I don't mind. That I actually think is a pretty good character. Mainly because I didn't know she was Korean and thought, oh, she's this really cool reporter that is also, happens to be Wally West's girlfriend, Linda Park. I don't know if it's a detriment or an enhancement, but some artists back in the 90s cannot draw Asians well at all. And the artist that was drawing the Flash during the time Linda Park was a major supporting character, I could not tell she was Asian. So I was more interested in her character, and I read her character. I'm like, this is a cool character. I like her. You gotta keep in mind, this is also during the time before Mark Waid fucking lost his shit and was actually a competent writer and was writing like the books no one wanted to write and did a pretty good job with it. I mean, he kept the Flash going for the longest time because no one else before or since knows how to write the Flash. The Wally West Flash.
Yeah, because then they brought Barry back, and it's all about him, and gave Wally PTSD, and he went to get help and ended up killing a bunch of heroes at this.
Yeah, we don't talk about that.
Yeah. He killed Roy Harper, the bastard.
Well, Roy
was... value was lost.
let's talk about when it gets bad. Amadeus Cho. I hate this kid. He's arrogant. He's like the smartest guy in the room, and he lets everyone know that in such a way that makes you want to see him taken down the peg. He took on the traditional like Rick Jones-esque role of, you know, friend of the superhero. I just don't enjoy Amadeus Cho. I find him completely just, I hate him. I hate Amadeus Cho.
Everybody loves Amadeus Cho.
I like him now more than I liked him. In the beginning, I was on a scale of 1 to 5, I gave him about 1.5 because smartest kid in the room. He's got that Reed Richards ability to like take an electric shaver and turn it into a taser kind of intelligence. But the attitude just wore me out so quickly. I liked it. I started to like him a lot more when he was the totally awesome Hulk, although that was pretty much because of the Frank Cho art in that initial run. And then they had the thing where, you know, he started to lose control of the Hulk, and then he became Brawn, where he still got gamma strength, but he's more of a Doc Samson sort of level. I like him now, but yeah, the whole kid was annoying. And then when they tried to make him like some sort of exemplar of the Greek pantheon because he was palling around with Hercules, I just could not understand what the hell was going on there.
Yeah, it didn't work. And again, it's the only time I liked him during that era. Well, I didn't like him, but the only time I smiled when he was on in a book was when he was trying to hit on some Atlantean chick by saying, I was voted the 5th smartest man in the world. And she's like, who gave you that? And he said, oh, I won this contest from a soap company. And then she laughed in his fucking face.
Yeah, that's not exactly a mark of courage there. Although the whole... that Mastermind Excello, which was the name of the soap company that ran that contest, has some basis in Marvel history. but that's neither here nor there.
All I'm saying is I love the fact that he tried to use that as a fucking pickup line, and he got dunked on hard.
Yeah.
Shit, it's just really hard because they try to put these characters up front. Marvel in the last 6 or 7 years have been pushing really hard for, oh, we need to show that that we are friendly to the Asian audiences. So they try to like create all of these brand new Korean heroes. Like they created like 6 or 7 in the last 5 years.
Like, yeah, and they're all China money.
They've already had lots of Chinese characters because there's a Kung Fu craze of the 70s.
Yeah, and they're all part of the current incarnation of the Agents of Atlas.
That book is garbage, and I'm going to touch on that in a second. So let me name some characters they created recently, like literally recently. There's Luna Snow. There is Amy Han, White Fox, or Kamiko. Kamiho, pardon me. You have Don B, who is Crescent Bear. It's like these characters have been created literally in the last 5 years. What?
Yeah.
With all these animal powers, it sounds like they're making Native American characters.
Well,
they got
in Korean culture. There is something that could almost be considered like totem, but it's really not, and it's hard to explain to white people. So I'm not going to try. But it's not like totems at all.
Hard to explain, Ben. Okay. So she's. The girl's a Taekwondo prodigy, and she has a magic mask that is inhabited by a magic bear spirit.
Okay, number one, that's not okay. Yeah, I'm gonna shelf that. Red's kind of right. They're trying to be like, oh, it's animal spirits. Let's make it like Native Americans. Red's right about that.
Do they give white people superpowers?
not
Native American enough.
Well, isn't that an African thing where they give white people animal powers?
It's fucking Native American.
No, what's the name? Buona Beast.
Yeah, he drank magic water and had this helmet that let him create chimeras.
Gross.
Yeah. Anyways, I'm dancing around the big one because all these characters are kind of just sort of there. I have to take some hits at Cindy Moon Silk. She is god awful. She is the quintessential Mary Sue. If you have a checklist of character traits of the modern Mary Sue, she hits every one of them. Has the exact same powers or abilities or training as the main hero? Check. Has better powers than the main hero? Check. Hidden away, secret training, check. It's like Dan Slott was trying to make a caricature of a Mary Sue, but then you realize he's doing it for real and he's telling it straight, and you go, oh my god. Another part of the checklist. Main character is inexplicably attracted to her and can't stop wanting to fuck her. Check.
Inexplicably means there is an explanation. It just doesn't make any goddamn sense.
Let me put it this way. Peter Parker, Spider-Man, has been around a lot of heroes, a lot of villains. And I know they said this thing about like pheromones and shit, but who's another spider character that gives off pheromones? Like that's her main power set, to give out pheromones. And he never had the inexplicable urge to fuck her.
Yes, he has.
No, he hasn't.
That's her whole fucking spider power. That's her. That's what her pheromones do.
I know, but he never felt like, oh my god, I have to fuck her. No, it's
okay. Which other character are you talking about?
Spider Woman, Jessica Drew.
Yeah, she's got the pheromone powers, but they explained the whole Peter and Cindy wanting to fuck all the time is a component of them being bitten by the same radioactive spider.
No, it's because she's part of the same totem of the spider totem of she's the bride.
Yeah, and they also said the thing, it's predominantly...
explanation they give it, it's fucking dumb.
Right? Exactly right, exactly right.
I know what I read I'm just saying. They probably said two different explanations because no one gave a crap to begin with.
Silk is a bad character, and she doesn't really have a personality. And Dan Slott has even admitted that he created her as like a fuck fantasy, which is kind of weird and creepy because every female character he creates is a fuck fantasy, oh, if not yeah, for himself, but for a writer.
Yeah. I'm just saying, Ben, you're telling me the guys that created Black Cat didn't have like some sort of Catwoman fetish or anybody that's created characters. And I'm just saying it's not that much of a stretch.
The guy who created Black Cat did not pretend it wasn't.
He also didn't outright say, I'm just saying everyone, you look at Jim Ballant, like the dude, not every woman has triple double D's for breasts. And that's how he drew every woman in his Catwoman.
You don't have to be the devil's advocate to everything.
I'm not being the devil's advocate. I am stating my opinion. My opinion is it's not being a devil's advocate thing.
Black Cat was created in the era of I'm making a sexy femme fatale, which is an archetype that is a cat burglar thief that is a foil and sometimes ally to Spider-Man. I made her sexy because fuck yeah, that's her character. And he never pretended he was trying to write this big inclusionary social justice societal representation bullshit thing. He just created a character for a funny book about a man with fire powers fighting bad guys. Dan Slott created Cindy Moon, and he's like on the up and up, like, oh no, representation, Korean characters, something, something, women power, yay. When in actuality, it's all fetish, 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 fetish. The guy who created Black Cat was honest with us.
I'd argue the point further, but we're already off topic.
Cindy Moon, when she was first introduced, is, and to this day, still written like she's a 16-year-old kid. She's highly energetic. She doesn't have any focus. She talks like with weird kid slang. And I keep on thinking that the writers keep forgetting she's a 30-year-old woman. Like, her appearance as Age of Atlas is weird to read to me because it feels like no one really stopped and said, this is a 30-year-old woman who lost literally half her life living in a bunker. What is her next step? Where is she going? And the next writer's like, I don't know.
They made her work at the Marvel version of the Fox News Channel, and she was seconded to J. Jonah Jameson. That's literally what happened.
I don't know. And I'm going to tie this all in Agents of Atlas. After I'm talking about Agents of Atlas, we'll move on to Red next. Agents of Atlas is one of the most racist, and I don't say this often. I don't really call books racist because most of the time it just feels like, meh, it's someone who doesn't know, who's just trying to write Cliff Notes versions of things, doesn't understand things. I'll give them the benefit of the doubt most of the time. But here, no, this book is racist. And Greg Pak, I'm sorry, you wrote it like a racist. You have the scene in the first book where you have all these Asian characters together debating the etymology of an Asian pear. They're called Asian pears in the Korean supermarket I go to. They don't say Korean pear on the sign. It says Asian pear. It's a really weird false dilemma where you know, Shang-Chi says, oh, that's a Chinese pear. Silk says, that's a Korean pear. And the Japanese character says, oh, no, that's a Japanese pear. Most Asians don't care that much. Great example of this is the Korean word for tofu is dubu. Tofu is a Japanese word. My mom says tofu. She doesn't give a fuck. Because tofu is the common word that most Westerners know. They don't go like, well, technically. No, it's tofu when you're in the market. And if you're talking Korean to another Korean in a dialogue, you'll say the native word dubu. But you don't. It's a weirdly weird false dilemma. And then in like the second or third book, you have a scene with all these Asian characters hanging out the base, and they're like, "Well, the only thing we have here is rice and spam." And then everyone perks up like, "Oh my goodness, we can eat rice and spam together," because that's a stereotype that Asians love spam and spam fried rice. And all I have to say to that scene is, imagine you have a team of all black heroes, and they're hanging out at the base, and they say, "All we have in the fridge is fried chicken and watermelon."
Yeah, most of the black teams in Marvel Comics have very brilliantly avoided a stereotype like that.
Okay, and now I'm done touching all the Korean characters and the problems I have with them. Red. I think Red's going to entertain us here for a second.
I don't know about entertain, but geez. So, Native American representation in comics is not fucking good. Like, they're always, like, we're magic Indians coming from the bush. Here, white men, have some superpowers. Make sure not to destroy society.
I love your accent there, Red, I gotta say.
You know, the funniest thing is, when I talked to Red about this before, the only Native hero that Red says, "That one's not too bad." And that's the best compliment I've heard Red give.
Forge?
Yes, was for Forge. Just, "That one's not too bad." That was the best compliment.
That's because Forge is a regular fucking dude, except he has a bandana. Like, they don't ever go into fucking, "Oh, Forge is super Native American, and you want to go talk about your ancestry and shit." No, he's just, "I'm going to build a big fucking time machine and go fuck yourself."
And that's another thing, is Forge's powers are, like, he can mess with technology. His powers, he's like a technomancer. So it's like his powers are like the opposite of Native American powers.
Yeah.
Well, when I was reading X-Men growing up, and Forge came in, he's like, "Oh, he built himself this metal hand, and he's got the robo leg," and like, he looked like the way they were drawing Tony Stark at the time. It's like this very generic looking white man. And then I was like, "Whoa, wait, what, why is he on top of like this mesa and arrow?" Oh, he, you know, just.
And eventually they gave him the tassels on his fucking pants and shit.
Yeah, the fringe. Okay, that maybe you can, you guys might be able to explain. What was the thought process when they did X-Men Evolution and they tried turning him into Fez?
I don't fucking know. I don't think the guys who wrote X-Men Evolution knew what ethnicity Forge was.
They didn't know what the ethnicity of half the characters were, because the X-23 first appearance was X-Men Evolution, and I swear to God, they drew her to look Israeli.
I don't know, she's just drawn to look like every other woman.
She didn't, wasn't anything special. Like, she had brown hair and brown skin and green eyes, which is fucking weird. And
like I said, Israeli.
Israelis don't have green eyes.
Yes, they do. Not a lot of them, but they do.
Mm-hmm. But she's cloned from Wolverine, who is not Israeli.
I know, that's what was weird to me. That the Knucklehead's DNA creates an Israeli.
It could be from her mother, I suppose.
Or whatever genetic wizardry they did in the lab that created her.
But all I gotta say is, at least they're trying to make your people of your fucking ethnicity look good in comics. Meanwhile, in mine, we have a Marvel poster of all these superheroes just powering up and looking fucking super cool. Everybody's giving cool poses. And in the corner, there's a naked Indian with a fucking bow and arrow.
Was that Red Wolf?
Yeah.
Okay. What's your opinion, like, the 60s, 70s Red Wolf? Like, the guy with the wolf mask, pelt, and the medicine stick, and the pet wolf, and all that. Do you think that's more... properly representative, no. Or is that just an insult?
It's not an insult. It's just a stereotype. Like, people
okay.
are dumb. I don't see people are stupid, all right? So, and they do stupid things. It doesn't mean that you're hateful. It just means you're uneducated. You don't know any better. So I'm not going to hate you for that.
All right. What about Shaman from Alpha Flight?
Oh, my God.
Do you have 2 hours?
It's worse because he's Cree like me and it fucking pisses me off.
Okay. What about Man of Bats?
Man of Bats is fucking... He's left over from like a 1950s comic and they decided, hey, we're going to do Batman International and we're going to make a fucking Indian Batman. What about Man of Bats from the 1950s? Sure, okay. Then you have a guy running around on a dirt bike with a fucking Indian chief headdress and a fucking bat fucking mask underneath it. It looks so dumb.
It looks like fucking, something from the 50s.
It looks like so dumb that it's actually fucking awesome.
What's his civilian name, Red?
I can't remember.
Oh, give me a second. I'm gonna look it up.
I just looked it up. His civilian name is Bill Great Eagle.
Yeah.
Why can't Native Americans just have normal fucking names? Like, my fucking last name isn't Thunder Eagle or some bullshit like that. Like, fuck. I got a regular ass fucking last name. That's because fucking Native Americans never had last names, and the Christians went around and went, hey, you're fucking Smith now. Hey, you're fucking Jones now. Hey, you're Davis now. And they just went around and gave us fucking Christian names. So most fucking Native Americans should have Christian fucking names.
It's as for mentioned, Shaman's last name is Two Young Men.
Oh my God. That just sounds terrible. Sounds like he's a fucking child molester. Like, nobody would fucking walk around with that last name. Okay, let me give you like a truth about Native Americans in real life. If you ever met a guy whose last name is fucking like Giant Eagle or some shit, he changed his fucking name. His last name was probably something Christian. He's like, well, I'm going to be a cool Native American. I'm going to change my fucking name to Giant Eagle. So if fucking Mr. Two Young Men is a Cree like me, he changed his fucking name to Two Young Men. So I don't know if he's registering himself on the child molester fucking, like he wants fucking people to know, hey, I'm a registered child molester.
I don't think Ben can breathe anymore.
I'm fine. Right? I'm fine. It's
it sounds like you're dying over there.
Like, there are people who have names like Red Raven and stuff like that, but it's usually because they changed their fucking name at some point, like in the 60s or something.
No, most of the last names are pretty bad, like Proud Star, Wingfoot.
Proudstar is okay.
You like Thunderbird?
I don't like fucking Thunderbird. Okay, there's a trope in movies where the black guy always dies first.
Yes.
Sorry to fucking say it. Well, in the X-Men, they decided the Indian guy is going to die first. That's Thunderbird's whole fucking deal in the giant-sized X-Men when the X-Men first premiered. Cyclops, I don't believe you're a good leader. There's a nuclear missile. I'm going to jump on it and detonate it in the atmosphere. Let's not worry about nuclear winter or think about it in any possible way.
Well, his brother had a badass death in X-Men Days of Future Past.
What the fuck was his death? I can't even remember.
He was nuked by a Nimrod Sentinel.
Well, he was fighting three of them, so that's... Like, Storm went out like a chump.
I'll remember some skinny Puerto Rican dude playing his brother in a fucking...
And then he was Jafar's son in those Disney's Descendants TV movies. Yes, I watch Disney Channel.
I'm going through the list of Native American heroes in Marvel Comics, and there's nothing that fucking sticks out.
Well, Daniel Moonstar is a fan favorite of... Okay, not fan favorite, but fan known.
Daniel Moonstar is the most fucking bland character ever fucking made. She's literally there just to be... Hey, sometimes we need some kind of Native American bullshit. Daniel's gonna do it. I can track down people. For some fucking reason, I'm trained to track down fucking people. I can do that. Okay, you're done. Daniel, just go in the background. Don't ever fucking talk again. Don't say anything until we need you.
So, I just want to bring up one weird thing about her costume. Is she's wearing like the standard New Mutants outfit with the yellow vest and tights, but and the dark blue black full body suit, but like she has the yellow gloves, but for some reason she's wearing deerskin boots.
Because she talked to Forge, and Forge is like, "Hey, you got to be a little more Indian. Put some fringe on there."
Yeah, and then she became a Valkyrie and. Part of they updated her costume so they get like these vaguely wait. Nordic.
Can I ask a serious question here to Red and the audience? Now, I know Daniel has like a completely different belief in like spirituality and et cetera than Red does, obviously, because separation by hundreds of thousands of miles or thousands of pounds, thousands of miles from where Red is. But what would your mind go through if you suddenly became another Pantheon's servant of burying the dead? Wouldn't that like mess with your brain a little?
I don't fucking know.
I'm just saying it.
I'd be like, holy shit, the fucking Norse gods are real? Holy fuck. That's what my reaction would be.
And also, by that point, Ben, the New Mutants had been through a lot of shit in their own title that they got PTSD for days. I'm pretty sure she took one look at that and she's like, cool.
Okay, I just want to say that sometimes the comic book answer of what's the life, afterlife, meaning of life, which god is right, and Marvel's answer is all of the above, feels very noncommittal to me and weird.
Well, Marvel's answer is all the gods are aliens.
Okay, George Soklos.
There's a guy named Powwow Smith in
the comics.
What the fuck?
He's a Western character.
Powwow Smith. That's, oh my god. At least his last name is a Christian name.
I'm looking at all the fucking Native American characters in goddamn DC. The only ones I've ever heard of are fucking what the fuck's his name? Apache Chief.
Enough what about talk? Black Bison?
Never fucking heard of him.
One of Firestorm's villains.
Oh, Firestorm. Yeah, we're going to A tier here. Echo is Native American?
Yeah.
Oh my god, Echo. Yeah. There's a recent fucking book about fucking indigenous voices or some shit that Marvel came up with. They hired fucking some Canadian artist who is part native to fucking draw it, and oh my god, he draws people so fucking ugly. Daniel Moonstar looks like the gross, not Daniel Moonstar, Echo, who has been drawn extremely beautiful every time she's been drawn in Daredevil. In this, she just looks like the ugliest fucking bitch you've ever met in your life. Like, she has, like, this giant-ass, typical, stereotypical Native American nose and shit like that. It's just, ugh.
I didn't know Echo was supposed to be Native American because I assumed she was Hispanic. Because her name is Lopez.
Well, she's half Hispanic.
I remember when she was introduced in the Daredevil Marvel Knights run there, and they specifically mention her father as being Native American and he's working for the Kingpin. And she was taken in, the Kingpin became like a father figure to her, but they specifically mention it's the dad and the mom was Latina.
Ah, well.
Oh my God, Pie Face is on this fucking list.
I always thought he was Asian and they were just being super racist calling him Pie Face.
That's what I assumed. Well, actually, I didn't know that Pie Face was a racial slur because when I was talking about how much I loved Green Lantern Legacy, I said Pie Face 27 times before someone told me, hey, Ben, that's a slur.
There's a comic where he shows up to like Hal Jordan's funeral and they draw him looking native. Or not native, like Asian looking. Then they made a spin-off comic of him where he's like all hateful of Hal Jordan and shit.
So, I want to
And
bring
then they
up
turn him.
for Reds. I want to bring up Wyatt Wingfoot for one reason.
Who the fuck is Wyatt Wingfoot?
He is a friend of the Fantastic Four,
He's
and
Johnny Storm's college roommate.
yes, he is his father's brother's cousin's former roommate. Anyways, Wyatt Wingfoot, because of a really, really, really weird racist issue of Fantastic Four that Dan Slott wrote, surprise, where the Mole Men have decided to become Native American.
Oh my God. Not that fucking issue. Yeah, Mole Men like walking around in like leather fucking clothes and shit. Like, what is this, 19 or 1835? What the fuck? Can't you just wear regular fucking clothes like
Can't you go to
normal?
the Walmart? Get some
There's a Walmart down the
slacks.
street. We can just give them regular fucking clothes. Why are we giving them deer pelts to fucking wear? What's going on here? Then you got one guy. I thought it was funny.
Have saved it, in my opinion. Like, does Wyatt Wingfoot even have powers, JT?
No, he's just in incredible physical shape, and you would have to be because he ended up dating Jen Walters' She-Hulk through a lot of the John Byrne series.
Okay,
Definitely
under powers and abilities for Wyatt Wingfoot, it lists superb athlete, highly skilled tracker.
Well, that's every fucking major character in the comic.
I had to bring that one up. Skill, okay, animal trainer, horseman, motorcyclist, dancer, and marksman.
Yeah, has skills. What's the name? Is it Puma is the name of the one guy in Marvel Comics who's like the leader of his tribe and he takes on like the totemic powers of the Puma in like this weird werewolf like sort of way.
I don't know that one at all. Oh
I
my
just remember him from MODOK's supervillain team up.
God, Red, you're right. These names are awful. These names are so awful. American Eagle's civilian name is Jason Strongbow. What the fuck?
Oh, that is the worst fucking name because that is the name of a Native American pro wrestler who is fucking Italian, by the way, in real
Chief
life.
J. Strongbow. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, I'm gonna ask you, Red. What do you think is the more offensive costume for American Eagle? The OG suit with like the red, white, and blue and the headdress and all that, or the current one where he just wears a leather jacket and a motorcycle helmet?
I'd rather go with red, white, and blue. All right. At least he looks like a fucking superhero, not a fucking nut bar driving around in a motorcycle. I watched a fucking video about somebody who's like, we need no more Native American representation. We're going to be the new Black Panther. No, we're not. And they're talking about who should play who on in these fucking, in the new Marvel fucking series. And American Eagle was one of them they brought up. And I was like, there's no fucking way they're going to make a movie about this fucking, fucking clown shoes motherfucker.
Did you call him a clown shoes motherfucker?
Yeah.
Well, I just have to poke the bear or one of the two bears and talk and just start us on. Tell us about what you thought of the New Mutants movie.
Oh my god. The New Mutants movie was so fucking dumb. The actor that played fucking, that played, what did you call it? Danny Moonstar's dad. I went to school with him. And they fucking, they put a different actor's name on it. On fucking, his name for
wasn't
fucking.
Wasn't that Adam Beach?
The Power Ranger?
That's who they put on, fuck, that's who they put on IMDb, but no. I'm pretty sure that was Dakota House playing him. A guy I went to school with. What any Indian will fucking do, I suppose.
Yeah.
And tell us about the myth of the two, was it two bears?
Okay, there's no such thing as the fucking two bears. Let me tell you that. It's the myth of the two fucking dogs. And it's been, this is a myth that's been around. I don't think Native Americans invented it because it's an Aesop tale as well. It's about every person that has two fucking fleeting personalities inside them, represented by dogs. The more you feed one, the stronger it gets. So if you do negative things and you feed the bad dog, the worse person you'll become. Feed the good dog, the better person you'll become.
Well, it's not the first time television tried to turn an Aesop into a Native American tale. I have to point to Star Trek Voyager at this. One of the best, or I would have to say the best episode of Star Trek Voyager was a two-parter Scorpion, because it's the only time the characters got to challenge Janeway and actually be right. Scorpion had the scene where Chakotay challenges Janeway about lying with the Borg, saying, and he told her, said, I heard this ancient story when I was a child about the scorpion and the fox. And it's an Aesop. It's an Aesop.
The writer of fucking Star Trek Voyager watched, what do you call it? That goddamn stupid movie about those two people who are murdering people. I can't. It's a dumb fucking movie. Anyways, they visit a Native American shaman who tells them that fucking tale. And obviously the writer didn't do any fucking research. And it's like, oh, I guess Native Americans came up with this.
It's an Aesop.
Yeah.
And I just thought
like
that
the Aesop is the turtle and the snake.
Yes,
that's what it is.
Despite the fact that they attributed an Aesop to Native American folklore, I still have to say Scorpion is the best episode of Star Trek Voyager they ever made.
That's a very low bar.
You're not wrong, but it is the truth. Because no one was allowed to challenge Janeway at all, ever. I mean, they built up Chakotay to be this badass freedom fighter that was willing to fight Cardassian ships 10 times the size of his little shuttle. But then, you know, when he's confronted by a fresh captain that is in her first command, he's not willing to challenge her or anything?
No, because she's the first woman captain of the show, so we can't. You can't make her look bad.
He took one look at that coffee cup and he's like, oh, I ain't fucking with that.
I'm just saying that throughout the first episode, before they finally like combined the crews, they built up Chakotay to be this guy, this myth of this badass guy that's fighting Cardassian ships and is a is a sly and a shrewd tactician, and then all of a sudden, like, we had like three seasons of him being, yes, Janeway, of course, Janeway, everything Janeway, and then all of a sudden Scorpion, where he finally finds his fucking balls, and he's like, you guys, you are a fucking nutty bitch to try to team up with the Borg. And then it turns out he's right.
Yeah. Speaking of TV, I guess another one would be JT's favorite character, Tommy Oliver, is Native American.
He's the whiniest motherfucker on that show. Doesn't he have like a Jew nose?
I don't think he's Native American in real life. I don't know what he is. So.
I think that's a Jew nose.
I don't think you can actually. He has a nose, Ben. It's his nose.
But in Power Rangers Zeo, they all have to go back in time and visit their fucking relatives in order to get the superpowers. And he goes back and visits a Native American tribe.
Is that when they were kids? Yeah.
Well, that was Mighty Morphin Alien Rangers.
Oh my fucking god.
And up until that point, I don't think they ever mentioned that Tommy was adopted. And then, surprise! He's Native American or half Native American. They had that whole thing in Zeo where they thought his brother was going to become the Gold Ranger before, you know, Austin St. John came back.
There's actually a funny story about Austin St. John coming back where he basically showed up and the costume guy's like, here, put on this do-rag on your head. Here, put on this giant heavy trench coat. And he's like, what the fuck? He's like, no, trust us, put it on. So it's like the first thing is him running through the desert with explosions around him wearing this do-rag with in a heavy trench coat. And it's like, what the fuck? Why is he wearing this?
It's because he's fucking 30 pounds overweight.
You're not wrong. I'm just saying it's funny because it's like he doesn't dress like that. He never dressed like that. The actor or the character. It's like you show up the costume guy's like, yeah, put this shit on.
Yeah, I think a couple of times Jason might have worn a do-rag and at the youth center, but that's about it.
How come Jason didn't turn out to be the Native American Ranger? I mean, they're all color-coded to their fucking races.
Was it the second Red Ranger Native American, Rocky?
No.
What's the one... Who is the one that killed the guy on the boat?
That's during the Disney era. I can't remember who the fuck was the one, okay.
On the boat is... I know the Wild Force Red Ranger killed his roommate in real life.
With a sword!
Yeah.
The guy you're talking about wasn't a ranger. He was a background character, kind of like Bulk and Skull.
Okay.
And he killed his grandparents in order to inherit a boat.
Okay, that's all sorts of fucked up.
But yeah, I think I'm done. JT can go now.
All right, talk to us about the amazing Ukrainian character of Red Widow, JT.
The wannabe novelty vigilante that has only four appearances in Marvel Comics. Yes, we could talk so much about her.
Well, it's not my fault that most of the Uke characters are kind of crappy.
Yes, most people from Ukrainian in comics have not been portrayed very kindly in that medium, Ben. I mean, the idea... The Red Widow was literally this 9-year-old rescued by Natasha Romanoff, and I'm going to bring you to the States, and she does, and I'll come back for you, and she never did, and she just lived with S.H.I.E.L.D. for some reason and became like this badass vigilante because she lived around spies for so long that she couldn't help but, you know, pick up stuff. And then she goes out in the world, and she's got, like, taser swords or something. But she literally, folks, I'm not kidding, she shows up in the Mockingbird one-shot from S.H.I.E.L.D., the 50th anniversary event. She's in one issue of Ms. Marvel and a couple of Black Widow, either young adult novels or graphic novel one-shots. I can't care about this character. I just can't.
What I love is her name is so Eastern European. It's like try hard Eastern European.
Yeah, like Ava Orlova. Like,
so you have to say the whole name.
Yeah.
Ava Antalova Orlova. Eastern European languages are always so harsh on the tongue.
Yeah. I mean, there's Marvel Comics alone, like they when they try to specifically put a character from a specific geographic location, they don't try very hard. The two that I know about from Marvel, like there is a character, his mutant name is Primal, his real name is Teon Masek, and he's one of the five lights, like the five mutant births after Hope Summers is born in the mid-aughts, like that when they, you know, first mutant birth since the Decimation, you know, no more mutants in the Scarlet Witch and that bullshit. And he basically, this guy, he's, those five lights were supposed to be representative of the original five X-Men, so he's essentially Beast, where his powers are, he works more off of primal instincts sort of thing, and is literally the dog. Like, it's basically, what if a dog was in a human body, because that's how they write him to act. Like, he's just this giant attack dog. And the only other Marvel character from Ukraine that I know of is Yelena Belova, the second Black Widow, the blonde Black Widow from the late 90s, early aughts there, who's going to be in the Black Widow movie whenever that movie decides to get released, because apparently they pushed it back again.
It's, like, the problem is Eastern Europe blends so easily with a writer. But the honest truth is, if you actually, like, talk to someone from Eastern Europe, they're really, really, really proud of their country.
Yeah. And most of the sorry, you go, Red?
A lot of it has to do with the Cold War. And during that time, everything was Russia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're not wrong.
Like, everything in that area was Russia.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. It's but the funny thing is, I don't know if Red knows this, but the audience might not know. Most stories in Seinfeld are, or at least early Seinfeld, are based on real events that happened to or around or witnessed by Larry David and Jerry Seinfeld. Festivus was a real holiday practiced by someone in the writer's room. But I bring this up because there's a scene where Newman and Kramer are playing Risk on a train, and Kramer is saying stuff about the Ukraine is weak, the Ukraine's a sitting duck, and this Ukrainian guy walks up to him and starts, like, getting pissed off. And apparently that really happened. Like, someone in the writer's room was making fun of the Ukraine, and someone in, like, a bus or a train walked up to them and started, like, trying to start a fight.
None of the writers in the fucking Seinfeld room were that creative or that fucking crazy. They stole their jokes from fucking local comics. They'd go to fucking, like, comic, where places people would have, do comic sets and stuff like that, and they would just steal shit to the point where they actually had a list of these writers, and, like, these guys were banned from going into the fucking place.
I heard the Ukrainian story was what happened to a writer. But my point is, like, Ukrainians actually are, like, that proud. And so it's sort of weird, like Western writers, like, make it all homogenous, but if you actually talk to someone that's Ukrainian or Russian or Czech or something, they're actually extremely, extremely, no, we're nothing like those guys. What would a Ukrainian character be like if they actually stuck to only Ukrainian, like, stereotypes and not, like, dip into their toe in the deeper Russian stereotypes? I wonder.
These progies are awesome.
Yes!
Yeah, pretty much. Sadly, I only know of I only know of Ukrainian traditions and Romanian traditions from my various family members. I am woefully, woefully neglectful of my own people's, you know, history and culture somewhat. So, I mean, what are you going to do? So when you talk about Eastern Europeans, I don't automatically think Russian, but I think of stuff like, you know, Hungary, Turkey, Romania, stuff like that. I mean, as there are other characters from that area of the world that I have enjoyed. Like, I know not a lot of people have liked her, but I do have some affection for Nadia Van Dyne, the daughter of Hank Pym, a current Wasp, which I forgot that, well, until this character came out, I forgot that Hank Pym had a girlfriend before Janet, and that her is Maria, like his first girlfriend slash wife. You know, she was the daughter of this Hungarian scientist, and, you know, how they were writing, you know, they would, like, it's like Jughead picking the Archie's vacation spot. They would throw a dart at the European continent, and that's where, you know, this character in the story is coming from. You know, Nadja's fun. Dmitry Pushkin from DC Comics, the original Rocket Red. You know, because I was reading a lot of that Kevin McGuire, you know, I can't believe it's not the Justice League era in the late 80s like that. That was my first, you know, dip into the Justice League with those comics. And they wrote him as like this stereotypical Russian. Like, I remember there's this one issue where the Justice League is split off and they're trying to get stuff for this barbecue at Mr. Miracle and Big Barda's house. And, oh, he's like going with Martian Manhunter to get some. Oh, we got to pop in here. Just, I'm going to say hi to a friend quick. And two pages later, John's sitting there in his human disguise, absolutely fuming. And Dmitry is doing that. He's dancing on a table while trying to balance a glass of vodka in his head. And I was like staring at that. And I asked my dad, do Russians actually do this? And my dad is like, to quote Red, I don't fucking know.
Can I say one thing about Nadia and Hank and the whole relationship? Nadia, about Hank and his second wife Janet. If you actually read like Janet Van Dyne's first appearance in comics, where she first meets Hank Pym, Hank actually remarks that she is like a dead ringer for his first wife. Like it's almost kind of creepy. No, it's creepy because he says she looks just like her, but 20 years younger, is what Hank said.
Yeah.
Because you have to realize Hank was like 30-something, and Janet was like 18.
And then they just start drawing them about the same age.
Yeah, and also the only thing positive I can say about the Unstoppable Wasp is I did enjoy looking at the artwork of what's the name of that Japanese art team, Guri Hero, Red?
Uh-huh.
That's the only positive that book had.
Yeah, I mean,
some science like slumber party.
Yeah. No, another character that both Ben and Red have kind of been pushing me to talk about, folks, is Superman Red Son, where very specifically, you know, when Kal-El falls to Earth, he lands at like a Russian farming commune in Ukraine, and then we get this whole wonderful alternative history take of, you know, what if Superman was Russian, and, you know, eventually he tries to take over the world, and just every crackpot Red Scare America hates the communist storyline that Mark Millar could come up with, he put into that comic. I'm not a fan.
I don't like Red Sun too much, honestly.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite stories. The whole point of it is Superman gets corrupted from the outside. You have Joseph Stalin, you have fucking Brainiac, you have all these people influencing. And then in the end, he proves that the point is, he's always Superman, no matter where he's from.
Yeah. Oh, I know. Did you guys watch the animated movie?
I did not. I saw the first couple seconds of footage. I'm like, this is not for me.
He changed the ending and made it dumb.
What, where he survives the bomb and lives far into the future? That's how the comic ends.
That's how the comic ends, but when he's talking to Lex Luthor, Lex Luthor gives him the fucking shrunken city of fucking
Kandor?
Kandor. But in the comic, Lex Luthor dies of cancer. And when he's dying in his last breath, he writes a note. And it just says, do you intend to put the whole world in a bottle? And Superman reads that note, and it just breaks his fucking heart. He realizes that he's going down the wrong path, and he stops.
Interesting.
Thought Luthor survived the end of the story in the comics, but I mean, other Russian characters, you know, because speak about that a little bit. Like, you got one of my favorite Spider-Man villains for the dumb simplicity of it is Alexei Sistovich, the Rhino. Just showed up as this guy. He's like you said, he's a spy working for a foreign power in his first appearances, and then over years they build him up to have this, you know, Russian heritage. And it was in the Spider-Man Rebirth era. I don't think it was Dan Slott had completely taken over writing the Spider-Man titles yet, but it's around the time like Kraven's widow came looking for revenge, and she creates like this new like jacked up Rhino with a warhammer because he needed that. And he, like, Alex, the Rhino had gone to prison. He did his time. He got out. He met this woman, fell in love. He was going to get married. He had put the villainous life behind him. And this tragedy happens where Kraven's widow, you know, Mama Kraven decides, well, whatever. She fucks his life so much that he's forced to take the super steroids and put the suit back on and kill this guy. And now him and Spider-Man have like this weird relationship where, you know, he doesn't outright try to kill Spidey, but at the same time, I will fuck you up if you get in my way again. You also have guys like, you know, Sergei Kravinov, Kraven the Hunter, who my dad saw the, forget what issue number was, the one where Kraven's got a shotgun and Spider-Man's on the wall behind him. My dad just took that. He's like, nope, you are not reading that. That is way too mature for you.
I just have to add with the Rhino. Rhino was of Russian descent in his first, for many decades, he was of Russian descent. But his Russianness didn't really come out until like the last 10 years.
He used to talk like a Brooklyn guy.
Yeah.
It was named Alex O'Hearn.
I'm walking here.
Yeah. Like, I remember in some of the early Rhino appearances, they mentioned he's, you know, working with these agents of a foreign power, and they never said that. But yeah, I remember a Marvel Handbook entry listing his real name as Alex O'Hearn. I might be misremembering that. And when you talk about Marvel comics and Russian characters, you know, you have to mention the Rasputin siblings, you know, Ilyana and Peter, you know, Colossus and Magic. And
now Colossus is the typical vodka drinking, hard speaking, you know, Chekhov talking Russian.
I don't think he drinks much, but yeah, he's that sensitive artistic soul in this giant rampaging bioorganic steel body.
And well, I have to be honest, I can't remember like Magic ever like doing the whole Russian. Magic's bigger thing was, hey, I'm Magic, I do magic.
Well, it wasn't even magic. Like, her mutant power is she creates stepping disc, basically portals through space, time and space, except like how Nightcrawler's teleportation takes him through limbo. Hers also does that, but then she gets kidnapped by like Belasco and other various demons, and she gets like develops magical abilities after that. And I remember reading New Mutants when I was a kid, and there is this scene where they go to limbo to rescue her, and she takes the soul sword for the first time. There's like this hideous transformation. She turns into like this were-goat satyr looking thing. Kind of gave me nightmares. And then she died, and like I kind of forgot that she was Colossus's sister, and I hadn't read X-Men for a couple years, and I was getting back into it where she died from the legacy virus, and Peter basically told Professor X and the X-Men to kick rocks, and he joined Magneto and the Acolytes for a while, which I thought was like I thought like Colossus was like this dyed in the blue and gold like X-Men, like he would never leave the team like that. So it was like a huge thing for me that, you know, he took off like that. And well, there's Natalia Romanoff. Is it Natalia or Natasha?
Natasha.
Okay.
Like Moose and Squirrel, Natasha.
Yeah. I guess Natasha is essentially a nickname. She was born Natalia Alyanovna Romanoff.
Daughter of who?
Sergey and God, I can't remember the mom's name.
No, I'm making a Endgame reference.
I know that's
daughter of Ivan is what the Red Skull said.
I thought it was Sergey.
No, he said daughter Sophie. Of Ivan.
Ivan and Sophie. Yeah, and she is straight up that Natasha Moose and Squirrel like Russian femme fatale. You know, I remember one of the first, like going at my grandparents' place and found this box of my dad's old comics that my grandmother had held on to, and finding the issue of Amazing Spider-Man where she got rid of the mask and the, I forget what Black Canary used to wear.
Jacket?
Sorry?
Jacket?
No, the, leggings. God, why can't I remember
fishnets.
That?
Fishnets.
That's it. Thank you. She got rid of the fishnet costume that she had worn since like the early days of the Iron Man stories and Tales of Suspense, and they got her into the Romita Senior black leather onesie with like the sexy low slung belt and the widow's bites or widow stings on her wrists.
Were the pages sticky?
There's a really, I wouldn't say weird, but there's a really interesting era of Black Widow's character, like right after she got rid of the mask, where she was primarily like a supporting character to Spider-Man and Daredevil.
Yeah. And
lots of people are more used to the super spy secret agent Black Widow, when before she was like this more of an agent for hire, shady gray allegiances character that sometimes teams up, sometimes antagonizes both Spider-Man and Daredevil.
Yeah. And I really liked her because I think...
And she had a costume with suction cups on her knees and palms that let her wall crawl for a brief period.
She had like the widow's line that she could essentially swing like Spider-Man.
Yes.
You know, there's one other Russian character in Marvel, two Russian characters in Marvel Comics that I'd like to mention. There is the goodest boy in the whole galaxy, Cosmo, who is a Russian cosmonaut dog who was part of the Soviet space program. He got launched into space. He was experimented on by aliens and developed mental, like, super telepathy. And was one of my favorite characters when they rebooted the Guardians in the comics. And I always wanted him to show up in the movies. And he gets like, I know, but he doesn't have like blink and you miss it kind of cameo. The one thing I loved about the Guardians of the Galaxy cartoon, and it's the only thing I love about that show, is, you know, it's like the Cosmo is good boy. Yes. Like just that stereotypical is good, is best accent, comrade. Like that sort of thing. It's just made me smile.
Well, before we wrap this this Eastern European section of the show up, I have one question for the for everyone here. When you talk about movie Colossus, do you prefer regular what's his name shirtless guy from the Bryan Singer movies, or do you prefer CGI character with over-the-top Russian accent from Deadpool?
I'm insulted you even have to ask that question.
I have to ask that
Deadpool.
Question. Okay. Red?
Deadpool.
Okay.
He's
fighting
Dirty.
He
yes.
defeated the Juggernaut with electricity to the balls.
Yeah, but sometimes you got to fight like that. Now, the last two characters on my list I had, there's the Russian from Garth Ennis's Welcome Back, Frank, Run of the Punisher, that we lovingly portrayed by big, sexy Kevin Nash in the Thomas Jane Punisher movie.
That was a great fight scene.
Yeah. And just like the look, the smile that Kevin had, like where Tom and Jane, he stabs him with the switchblade and he just looks at him and just gets this sick, demented smile that I would love to talk to Kevin Nash and ask him if he looked at the comics, like, did you do that to reflect the comics or was that just direction from the director? Because like he comes in and he was literally the brick shithouse from the comic books. And I'm not as thick, but thank God they didn't bring him back and where they made him a cyborg and he had giant tits because that's how steroids work.
Well, what I loved about that whole fight was the Punisher, even in his early days in that movie, the Thomas Jane movie, is one of the most prepped up motherfuckers ever. And he had like all these hidden weapons set up, all these traps set up, all these switches and stuff to close doors and stuff. So he was ready for an ambush. And no matter what, here comes the Russian, and he's plowing through it all. And he's like, oh, fuck, that didn't work. Okay, yeah. Hidden grenade, oh, fuck, that didn't work. Okay, hidden gun, oh,
yeah, I just
fuck, that didn't work.
I love how he batted the grenade back into the bathroom with the crowbar, and I was like, oh, damn.
Yeah, like I said, instead look at Thomas Jane's face like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, I actually like the oh, fuck look where he pulled out the 45 and he hits it with that weight and it's bent. He just like, really?
Yeah,
son of a bitch.
Like I said, it's just that repeated look on Thomas Jane's face of, oh, fuck. Yeah.
And the last character, and I saved this one for last because it may or may not be related to me in real life, is Count Dracula. Now, the reason I say that is my dad, God rest his soul, went and he was researching the family tree, and he's knowing my proclivities as a teenager, he's like, okay, John, I'm saying this, but it's like a one in a million chance, but a lot of our family comes from the part of Romania that was once known as Transylvania. And I, you know, set to like lose my shit, and my dad put his hand on my shoulder. So yes, there is a small chance that you're related to Count Dracula.
That you are related to Vlad Tepes?
Yeah, that, and he said that it's not Dracula, Vlad, the actual Count Dracula. But Dracula in Marvel Comics, like one of the first Marvel horror comics I ever read when they did some reprints in the 90s, like with the Midnight Suns line, was the old Tomb of Dracula comics. I like that classic Timothy Dalton looking Dracula they used to have, you know, with like the blue black cape, red lining, you know, pencil thin mustache, looking like this Eastern European aristocrat, versus the modern day Marvel Dracula, which is still the same character, except now he's got like this weird like Francis Ford Coppola battle armor and gray skin and long white hair and just looks like a vampire versus the original one. I mean, Dracula's always been a character that I've loved in comics. If I see a comic that's got Dracula involved, I'll check it out because I'm a fan. But I want to ask you guys, what's your favorite version of Dracula that you've seen in comics? Or one you've enjoyed the most?
I'll let Ray go first on this one.
I don't have one.
Okay, Ben?
Dracula's always been teasing to me.
Okay. It's not the best one, but it's the one I can think of the most that I enjoyed seeing the most of. Fuck it. I'm going to say the Castlevania Netflix cartoon because there was a pretty good badass
good
fight where they played Bloody Tears as the background music, and fuck it. I just go for the Fifis.
That's a solid call. Because I can't remember. What's the name of the voice actor that does Dracula in that series? Do you remember?
I do not. I don't even know who most of the voice actors are. I mean, like, the first three seasons were the only watchable ones. Or no, the first two seasons. The third season got in really weird places really quick. And it's like they really should have done a time skip to Simon Belmont if they wanted to, like, keep interest up, because this whole Isaac and Hector thing's just bullshit.
Yeah, because it's Richard Armitage is Trevor Belmont, Graham McTavish, who I remember him. Oh, that's who he is. He's the Saint of Killers in the AMC Preacher series. He's the voice of Dracula in that series, and Alucard is voiced by James Callis, who was Baltar in the reboot of Battlestar Galactica.
Anyways, I think we got off the track here with JT about the representation of our at this season comics. I can bring up some German characters for the other half of me, but I can't think of any German characters.
Red Skull?
Hate Monger?
The Hive?
My people came from the Pennsylvania Dutch. We were pacifists. We were Mennonites. Like, give me a break. Oh, Superman the Nail.
No, Ben, just no.
Give me something! Okay, anyways, this is your host, Ben.
JT from Saskatoon.
Red Ink.
And we're saying goodnight.
Dal Svidaniya.
Nightcrawler.